Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. It's a pleasure to welcome Zach Lewis to the show today. Zach is the Chief Information Officer and Chief Information Security Officer at the University of Health Sciences and Pharmacy in St. Louis. Well, Zach Lewis, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so delighted that we can make this happen today.
Yes, I'm happy to be here. Thank you, Lisa. This is great.
Yeah, you and I have known each other for several years now because our paths crossed in the CIO world a lot. You are both a CIO and a CISO, which, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about. But the first question I want to ask you is, because I want to kind of dive into this for a minute, but how do you introduce yourself? You're not just a CIO, CISO. You are also, how do you introduce yourself?
Sometimes I go by the homesteading CISO because I run a homestead, and I don't know, I've always been into that sort of thing, and just kind of stuck because I'm always talking about what I'm doing there and raising chickens and different sustainability stuff I have going on. So it just kind of started getting attached to it.
Did you grow up that way, Zach? Did you grow up with gardens and farm animals? And
yeah. Like so I'm actually from outside Paducah, Kentucky, outside the Metropolis, Illinois area. So further south than St. Louis, but out in the country, big open prairie lands, farms all around. My parents were big gardeners, big outside people. So I grew up like that. I wasn't on a farm per se, but I definitely was always outside having to do stuff as a kid.
Absolutely. Well, you and I have talked about that because I grew up in Paducah, Kentucky too, as you know, went to Murray State, and same thing. My parents had land. We had a lot of land. I had horses and we had goats and things like that. And my dad had a huge garden, but that wasn't his job per se. He did other things and had his own company and everything. But we always grew up with the fresh vegetable, but there's always something to do, right? You're either harvesting or you're shucking corn or something, right?
Yeah. It was like every day go out and pick all the berries and shucking corn. Yeah, we did that plenty going through planting. I always had to help like get the garden areas kind of like plowed or tilled and dig the little holes and build up mounds. It's always something.
Mm-hmm. And then all of the weeding that you have to do and the hoeing that you have to do. Right. Well, let me ask you this. Where, you are a CIO CISO. Where did your passion for technology first start? Tell me about that journey. What was the precipice for it?
Yeah, man, that goes probably back to, I guess, high school, maybe a little bit before high school. Got a computer, started playing, games and learning how to do computers. But I remember in high school specifically, there were some courses I didn't want to take. There was stuff I didn't want to do. And they were like, well, we can put you in a senior level computer class. This is when I was maybe a sophomore. I was like, yeah, that sounds great. And I got in there and all the kids are seniors and they have senioritis. They don't want to do anything. So I'm like the one sophomore in there that the teacher is having do stuff because I'm still here in class. And he had me fix computers and go to classrooms and work on stuff and like build things for him and the computers. So I kind of just attached to it that way. And from that point onward into college, I wanted to get into sort of computer management. My first gig was at a tech startup where I just did tech support for them. I loved it. And as soon as I got to that point, that was kind of like the first step, Like in school, it was like become a tech, a professional tech person, and I did. And then when I got there, I was like, man, I want to become a systems administrator. And a couple years later, I was a systems administrator, and I was like, man, I need to become a CIO. That's what I need to do. Let's do that. And so I started kind of figuring out how to work towards that direction, and a bunch of different job hops along the way. But
yeah, I think I counted maybe 10 different things that you've done. I mean, you've done a lot, but you know, I want to kind of dig into that more because I read somewhere where you were big on like raising your hand for stuff. I want to do that. You know, if you've got projects more for me to do, I'm willing, and I'm willing to learn. So there's a lot there that I want to dig into. But let me ask you this. This is kind of, this is kind of an odd question, but have you seen any parallels between what you've learned about homesteading, Zach, and being a CIO CISO?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tell me more.
Yeah, I think the big one for me, I remember this a while, but so I got chickens very, very early when I moved to this property. And when I was building, I built the coop, and the coop has a run, and that's where the chickens come out and kind of walk around. And that's usually where your chickens get taken out by predators and stuff. And it was like, how do I secure this? And it was like, all right, I'm going to build another fence around it, a bigger fence, that they can come out, but it's a lot taller and nothing can get in there. And then, you know, it's in my backyard. My backyard has a fence around it because I have dogs and my dogs are there. And one day I was looking out the window and I was like, man, it's kind of like I did a defense in depth with these chickens. I got multiple layers of protections getting to them. And they're almost kind of like my critical data, right? I want to protect them and their eggs. So I got maybe a firewall, and I got some perimeter detections. I got an EDR. I got motion lights in the back for at night when there's detections. Okay, that's kind of like an IDP, you know, something that's detecting movement or incidents, just like you would in a network. And then I got my dogs, man. Maybe they're like intruder prevention, so they're coming in, they're taking care of predators. All right, that's kind of like. It's kind of like the EDR that might be working to stop malware or something from hand. Okay, this all kind of makes sense. Yeah, and it wasn't built like that intentionally, but when you look at it, it just kind of happens. And whether that's just by design or because you've been doing it for so long and it becomes second nature, you just build these layers of stuff to protect things that matter.
That is so cool. I absolutely love it. I thought, you know, I just wonder, you know, because I think if you look for parallels, you can find them. Sure. So you and I both taught, we've got 18 raised beds. I learned so much from gardening and so many life lessons, Zach. I mean, you can't just put a seed in the ground and go, okay, good luck. Now grow for me. And you got to nurture it. You got to make sure the soil, you got to make sure the infrastructure is right. Right. There's so many different parallels there. So I love that. I love that. Well, you know, we've already kind of started. You've done a lot of things. Your career started at a startup. Was that Datatel?
No. I worked at Datatel as an intern while I was still in school. And I worked there for, I don't know, 6 to 8 months. And it was a fun time because I was a full-time student. I was working a midnight shift with Datatel. So I was there from like 10 p.m. to like 6 a.m. And then I was leaving there and going back to class. And then sometime a little after that, I ended up getting an offer with another company that I had done some work with through the school, and they were the tech startup. So when I graduated, I went and worked there. I love Datatel, no disrespect there. But this tech startup, you know, it had like a Mario room, pool tables, ping pong tables, you know, fully stocked kitchen, a fully stocked bar, massages, like stuff a startup has. And when you're a college student, kind of getting out on your own, you're like, hey, this has got
this
everything.
Nice.
And I lived like 5 minutes down the road from it, and I was there almost all the time. And I was a big pool billiards shooter, and they had a table there. And one of the people that worked there, he was like a professional player in his youth, and he kind of did like concierge stuff. So I would meet him there on Saturdays, and we'd play pool for like 4 hours. So I was spending a whole lot of time there doing just about everything.
How fun. But you're right. As a college student, those perks really did add up, didn't they?
Yeah, I had fitness trainers and they had haircuts. I was like, I'm getting everything done there.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Well, you know, you've done coal plants. I think you were at Arch Coal, so you may have worked with my friend Dave Hartley. I don't know if he was there. Love Dave Hartley. But higher ed, what do you think has been like your most defining career pivot, you know? And I know that you've gone now from an individual contributor to leadership, but yeah, I don't know if you want to talk about that journey, but if you think about your career, I mean, where were there certain defining moments in your career that you can point to?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think probably the big one was that first transition from an individual contributor to sort of a management position. And I remember being at the St. Louis College of Pharmacy, and I'd gotten a couple promotions, had moved up, and I was the network and systems administrator at the time. And I worked a lot with the varying teams on IT, and I heard that the manager of the tech support center was leaving. He was going to move. And as soon as that job came open and I heard that, I immediately went to the CIO, who I obviously knew pretty well at this point. I said, hey, you know, Ryan is leaving. I can do that job. I would love to do that job. I already work with the techs on a regular basis. They're escalating stuff to me. We have a good relationship. I can do that. And that kind of goes back to how we started this conversation, talking about just raising your hand, saying you want to do something. So for the next couple of weeks, they just sent me over to Ryan. I shadowed him along with doing my job. I felt like I could even still do the job I was doing while managing the guy. So they kind of give me the flexibility and made this hybrid role where I did both. Mm-hmm. And when he left, you know, we had a formal interview, and they put me in that spot, and I just started managing them the way I've seen other people manage or read about doing it. And, you know, four people, and it wasn't too crazy. I had a bunch of student workers too, but it just kind of fit. And I stayed in that role for a couple of years. So that was pretty fun.
Yeah, it's a pivotal from going from, you know, an individual contributor to leadership. But Zach, I want our listeners to listen to what you just said. You just said, hey, that role is, you know, he's leaving. I can do it. Right. And so sometimes people will tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, have you thought about this? But then other times, and I cannot even tell you the number of leaders that I have interviewed, and they said, no. I mean, I'll never forget Dan Lorberg, very, very well respected senior leader at MasterCard. And I'll never forget her telling me, she goes, you know what I did? I raised my hands for the projects nobody else wanted. And she would have the confidence in herself that she could do it. She would go in and do it. And then, you know, people notice, right? And especially when it's a project that nobody else is raising their hand for. Well,
yeah, I think I do something very similar, and I do it because not just because no one wants to do it. I mean, no one might raise their hand. I'll do things that aren't in my wheelhouse at all if there's a project, because I feel like that gets you, you know, you're meeting other people in other departments, but you're also like flexing muscles you don't normally use. So I might have to come up with something really creative to make it work that I can then take back and use somewhere else, or see how things connect a little bit better or a little bit differently. So I love doing that stuff. But I mean, I did the same thing when I went from like tech support to a sysadmin. The head sysadmin left. I went to HR and I said, hey, I can do that. And it kind of worked there. So I kept doing that along the way. And it's funny, as you get older, you've always been told that, you know, you should always ask. The worst that can happen is someone says no. And like from even like dating and relationships, like, oh, just go ask, you know, the girl out. She says no. And at the time you're like, oh, that sounds terrible. But as you get older, you're like, all right, I'm just going to go do this thing and see if someone will. I did it recently with a podcast, a guy I watched for years, very respected CISO. And I was like, man, I'd love to be on his show. And then one day I was like, why don't I just go ask him? And I sent him a message on LinkedIn. He was like, we'd love to have you. Oh, that was really easy.
There you go. I love it. Such wisdom there. Asking for the responsibility, more responsibility whenever possible, raising your hand. Very, very wise advice there for any of our listeners. What do you think, going from that individual contributor to IT leadership, what do you think maybe were some of your biggest ahas, or maybe some things that surprise you? Tell me about that.
I had four full-time guys that reported to me, but then I had like 20 student workers, and you start, and I was younger than all of my full-time people. So coming in as a young person and managing people who have, you know, worked at, you know, the university or the college for 20, 30 years. Like, I have a guy who's been on help desk for like 25 years. So I have to come in now and tell him how to do things, or maybe I don't like that. Or, you know, you got to understand the environment. You talk to them, you got to, and then generationally, everyone is motivated by something a little bit different. They want a little bit different, and figuring out how to do that. So I know with like, I had I had students who would come in dressed in pajamas or, you know, wearing stuff maybe they shouldn't wear to work. And you're like, all right, how do I talk to them in a way that they're not going to get offended or I'm not going to get in trouble or, you know, like really right. figuring that out. Because some things were, I'm not going to go into them, but just stuff you don't read about in like first time manager books. And you're like, how do I navigate through this?
Yes. That's funny. All right, let's talk about this. Building trust before a crisis hits.
Ooh, okay.
Building trust before a crisis hits. How have you done that? Because I'm sure, I mean, you've led some major transformations. You are the CISO. I mean, you know, you always hear that adage. It's not if you are attacked, it's when you get attacked, right? So, you know, have you built trust on your teams, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, trust, it starts from day one. It goes from your team. It goes out to the exec team, other departments. I like a lot of leadership, I think mostly it's just negotiation and politics. So you got to know like who has the influence. You got to know who's running departments, what matters to those teams. It's a lot of talking. So when I came into this role that I'm currently in, I try to make myself visible. A lot of times, I think with IT leaders and security leaders, they're sort of tucked away with the IT and security teams. Whereas, you know, maybe the COO, the CFO, they're all grouped together somewhere else, and maybe in another building, another floor. And if you're separate from them, you're not in the conversations with them. You're not on their mind, which means security is not on their mind, IT is not on their mind. So, you know, make yourself available. If their offices are on a floor and you don't have one, see if you can move up there. If you can't, is there a conference room you can go set in and a few hours a day and just make yourself visible and seen? And that's really important too. So that you always want to have trust building before you get to the crisis. And then, you know, make sure you're delivering. So if you're actually doing projects with people, if you're working with people, you know, deliver, show results, help people out, help them through problems. And if you continually do that, when the problem actually does come up, they're going to know you got a good head on your shoulders and you're going to be able to take care of business.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. That's good. Well, you've led through a lot of change. I know that's one thing that we say in IT that is going, you know, you got to get used to change. You got to embrace it. You know, so what has been your philosophy in leading a team through uncertainty and change?
Through uncertainty and change, I mean, I think that philosophy is the same throughout, even when it's normal time, peace times, really. I hire people who I think are going to be able to do a job, and I hire them to do that job, and I'm going to let them do that. I try not to get in their way. You know, I'm hiring you because you're sort of that expert, right? So if you say, hey, this is, I think, the best path to go down, I'm going to trust you on that, you know, unless that trust gets violated somehow, but I'm going to trust that is the way to go. And you have my backing. All right. You've got the knowledge, you've got the experience. Let's go with that and run that way. So when you get to, you know, the crisis mode, you kind of know if these people are going to be able to perform. You know how they act under pressure, you know, where you need to, you know, give out a helping hand or let people kind of run with stuff. Have some good processes in place for people to follow and just kind of, you know, let people, again, do their job, because they get value from it too, and they want to be successful as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you are an empowering leader. I mean, you're going to empower them to do the job that you've hired them to do, which is wonderful. You know, continuous learning. I mean, you are a continual learner because you're constantly getting new certifications, or I see all kinds of things, Zach, that you're out there doing. How do you encourage that for your team? Like learning, continuous learning?
It's required.
It's required.
Forcing it down their throats. No, we actually are just wrapped up goal season here and planning for goals for the next fiscal year. And all of the people in IT and security and the library reports to me too. So anyone in these areas, they all have to have professional development type goals. I want you taking some courses. I want you taking some classes. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be directly related to your role. I just want you out there learning something, because you can find value in just about any sort of class or course. So we have LinkedIn Learning, we have CBT Nuggets. You need some books? I'll buy you some books. You want to take some courses online? Let's get you registered. Like, I strongly encourage people to learn. And then a handful of my tech people, as soon as they are come on board, they have goals within the first year of certifications or training that they have to accomplish if they want to, you know, continue to develop. So I'm kind of hard coding it into to what I need to see from them.
Good. Yeah, it's so important. A little side note, have you done any CBT training or anything on homesteading? See, you could do some.
Yeah,
that's right. That's an idea for you. Let's talk about cybersecurity just for a little bit. We're going to talk about cybersecurity for a little bit, and then we're going to take a quick break, and then I want to talk about something really exciting, your new book that's coming out. Higher education is a very targeted industry for attacks. Why is that, do you think, Zach?
Yeah, a number of reasons. One, we have a ton of personal information. So we have, we're a lot of students, a lot of rotation of students in and out every year. So a lot of fresh data. And we have to keep that for regulatory purposes for pretty much ever. So hundreds of thousands of records. And then you have your faculty and staff too. Higher ed and education as a whole is normally not super funded. We don't have a lot of money. It's very tight on budget. So a lot of resources don't get put into security to secure that personal identifiable information that's out there. So when threat actors are looking for easy pickings, it's like, oh, we can come in, we can get these accounts, we can break in pretty easily and disappear. And particularly, they like younger people's identification, social security numbers and stuff, because it has less of a credit history. It's pretty clean, and they can kind of reuse those to generate fake information and open up accounts and different things like that. So very highly targeted for those reasons.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the overlooked vulnerabilities? I mean, what kinds of things have you done at the university, to really protect you guys? And then, maybe in talking about that, maybe you may even mention a few things that other people may have not have thought of.
Sure.
Would be helpful.
Sure. For us, when I came into this role in 2020, we still had a lot of outdated technology. And that's what you see a lot in higher education, if they've been running the same systems for, 15, 20 years and they haven't updated them, whether that's because it's too hard, they don't have the expertise, it's too expensive. There's a lot of reasons. So for us, we sort of reevaluated everything and I started moving things to the cloud. We did a big push to move everything off premises out to the cloud, and now we have a very cloud-first methodology and thinking. If it doesn't integrate with, Microsoft, if it's not cloud-hosted or SaaS-provided, we're not interested, because I'm not putting a bunch of infrastructure here. And that kind of goes back to cost, because those big upfront capital expenditures for hardware, for servers, for switches, it just doesn't appeal well to the board and to leadership. They don't want to see those giant numbers when things are tight, especially right now with how the education market is. So I was like, well, let's try to operationalize those. A smaller number every month looks a little bit bigger than those big numbers every couple of years. So that's kind of how we at least pivoted technology. And then now that we have everything moved out, we have a couple central points that they all use, we secure those central points. So if everything's cloud and you can only access stuff through a browser, maybe we secure the browser. If we do single sign-on on everything, everyone has the same identity, so we can secure at the identity point. So a couple key areas that we started securing where we can throw dollars at it that makes sense without having to do like a widespread and really kind of spread our money out wide and try to capture everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. That's good. I mean, the other thing that you have with universities a lot of times is research, right? A lot of research. We do a lot of work with WashU. There's so much research data and so much, IP there,
yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing you want to make sure that you're protecting as well, right?
Yeah, we have an entire couple floors dedicated to research. We work very closely with WashU. They have researchers over here and we work through a lot of different things there. I've actually had a couple instances where we've had to stop research leaving, going to other countries that it's not supposed to travel to. And it's very, St. Louis has had that happen with places like Monsanto or Bayer, where nation states have come in and tried to steal that technology or that research and bring it back to their countries and use so they can kind of make the copy and do it on the cheap. So mm-hmm. Things you have to be vigilant about, for sure.
Yes, for sure. Well, Zach, I have a lot more questions for you, but we need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Zach Lewis on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend, Zach Lewis. So Zach, here's what I want to talk about now. You've got something very exciting coming up that's going to be launching in January. You've got a book coming out called Locked Up. Can we talk about it? What inspired you to write the book for the first question?
Sure. So, I mean, we were just talking about cybersecurity and higher ed, and no one's impervious. It's not if but when. So we, even I, have had a breach. So we had a ransomware incident a few years ago. It wasn't major. It wasn't anything catastrophic. We're still operational, right? But you know, it still happened. And while working through that, you know, I kind of documented everything, ran through a lot of processes, saw where we were weak and how we got attacked. And then everything that kind of happened in between, how do we talk to the threat actors? How do we remediate the problems? How do you verify what's been compromised? And then, you know, what do you do going forward? How do you move past that? How do you regain trust and reputation and different things like that? And there really wasn't anything out that at least I could find that kind of talked about that. You hear case studies every now and then. There's a few books about different, you know, large scale breaches that made the news, but nothing that really walks you through the process. So I kind of wanted to throw all that together and almost like a case study how to of this is our instance. This is what happened. Here's how it happened. Here's how we got through it. And then people can use that sort of as a stepping stone. It's not going to be the same in everyone's case, but at least start talking about it. Because one thing, at least in our industry, is that if you have a breach, it's kind of a mark of shame, and we don't like to talk about it. Everyone's very hush-hush, and whether that's for legal reasons or, you know, ego reasons or whatever it might be, we just don't talk about it. So I'm trying to normalize that a little bit more, and we can share what happened and what went wrong, because the threat actors are talking about who they've hit on the back end and who they've compromised and what worked for them. And clearly, as ransomware incidents increase, attacks are increasing, what we're doing isn't working, so maybe we should try something else.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'm thinking by talking about it, Zach, and how you guys approached it, you may help somebody else prevent the same thing, right?
Yeah,
so, yeah, but, you know, I mean, you and I are in a lot of the same CIO summits and everything, and you just hear that all the time. I remember Sean Henry.
Yeah.
You know, a few years ago, you know, speaking at an event, and, you know, at the time he's like, you know, it's not when, it's not if, it's when. You will get breached. So you just got to protect yourself as much as possible. It's not something that you can just put on the back burner. You
yeah.
need to be.
And it's starting to get more traction. I think more boards are starting to look at it. More leadership teams are starting to look at it and pay attention and put some funding there. Again, that doesn't mean you're foolproof. There's always something new every single day, and AI is going to probably help speed that up a little bit too. But yeah, you just got to do the best you can with what you have. And there's a lot of foundations, I think, that people need to apply and look to. And sometimes we neglect those and for the new shiny tool, but I don't know. We'll figure something out, I'm sure.
Yeah, very good. Well, again, the book comes out officially January of 2026, but you can pre-order the book now, and we'll put all of that in the show notes for our listeners. You know, how do you hope, Zach, that this book, though, will prepare for the cyber? What do you hope leaders take away when they read your book?
Yeah, again, I think things like this are going to happen. They need to understand it's going to happen. It's not, you know, the CISO's fault. It's not the CIO's fault. It's not the help desk guy's fault. Like, people have gotten really good at compromising industry organizations and companies. That's what they do. And when you have, you know, someone like, you know, us in the industry, this is our job. We come here, we work, we try to, you know, upgrade technology, keep things secure, and that's cool. But these guys, that's their job. Their job is literally to break into companies, steal information, because that's how they're feeding their families. And if we mess up, we might, you know, we get our hand slapped. Maybe we get fired. Those guys mess up and get caught, they go to jail.
That's right.
Yes. It's a different, it's not just a passion anymore. Like, we have passion to work in this industry. This is their livelihoods over here. So it's a different perspective on how we handle things. And I just want people to see, like, this is what happened. And it's not, I'm not going to point blame. We made mistakes, but we try to fix those mistakes. And here's how you kind of work through it. You gotta be smart about stuff.
Yeah. Zach, it's so interesting that we're talking about this, because I just had a meeting this morning at 7:30 and I was talking to a gal and they were compromised. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I said, here's the thing. She goes, how is this happening? How is it? And I'm like, these guys, these bad actors, I'm not just saying guys, I'm saying in generality, it could be a woman or a man, right? But I said, these bad actors, that's their job. That's their full-time job, is to figure out how, you know, to break in to systems and things like that. It's just, crazy.
What's interesting is some of those people doing that, it's not even willingly. There's some countries that have actually, like, human trafficked people in, and they're forcing them day after day to send text messages, you know, to try to get you into a romance scam or to click a link. And they're literally captives. And that's what they have to, like, you have to do this. And they do it for 16 hours a day, and they sleep and they come back and they have 20 devices in front of them, and they just go all day. And it's really depressing and upsetting. And I don't know what, you know, we can do about it. I'm sure the government's working on it, but they're in other countries that we just don't have any pull with.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, let me ask you this. You just recently attended the FBI, the CISO Academy at Quantico. What was the takeaway there from that experience? How cool was that?
Yeah.
To go to the FBI Academy.
Yeah, I got to do that. That was last year. They run a session a couple times a year, and they try to bring in, you know, 15 to 20 CISOs. And you get to stay at Quantico, which is awesome in itself. You know, like, you're staying in the dorms or the FBI's training. You can go out and do a little physical training with them in the morning, do runs, work out at the gym, and everyone's there just kind of learning. But you're brought in, and all these agents come in. They talk to you about different case studies they're working on, or cases they're working, what these threat actors and nation states are doing. I can't go into details, but you get all these different briefings and really cool stuff just to see how they operate, how we can partner better with the FBI, with CISA, with different organizations in the federal government, how prosecutions happen, how evidence is gathered, and just really sharing that collaboration on what we're seeing, what they're seeing. And try to make everyone a little bit more secure. But it was a whole week-long event. Really awesome just being at Quantico and just seeing where everybody's trained and been taught. And, yeah, big part of the government and our history. So it's awesome.
Yeah, very cool. What a great opportunity. Well, let me ask you a question. So you've won a lot of awards. You know, Zach, you wouldn't say this about yourself, but, you know, I'm just going to mention these. I mean, you've won top global CISO in 2024, you're Titan 100, 40 under 40 in security, you've won a global HMG award, which you and I are both a part of. You know, if a colleague were going to be telling someone about these awards, what would you hope that they would emphasize about your leadership style?
I mean, I don't know. That's a great question. I try not to pump too much into the award stuff, but I guess, you know, if someone's going to look at it, and I hope they take away that, you know, there's been a lot of different industries, a lot of different organizations have looked and you know, seen value in maybe what I've done to some extent, and that gives some credibility that maybe I'm just not some guy in a chair, and I have some ideas of what I'm doing is right, and I have a good team behind me, and that people enjoy working for me, and that, you know, like, if I'm trying to hire somebody, they go online and search and see, and they're like, oh, maybe that's a good team, maybe they're doing something right over there, they've been recognized, I want to be a part of that, and hopefully there's some value to that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I know that you would not say this is a Zach Lewis award. This is a team award, you know, because none of us can do it without amazing team, right? You know, let's talk about this real quickly before we move into something extra. You know, how have you seen AI? What are you thinking about AI? What's your take on AI? Are you guys using it at the University of Health Sciences and Pharmacy yet? Tell me a little bit about what you think about it.
And I like me some AI. Let's be real. I like some AI. I've talked to Jake a lot about AI in a bunch of different capacities, but the university, I'm co-leading a workshop around AI and a rollout around it with one of my peers here, but we're doing ChatGPT, we're doing Copilot, we're testing it in a bunch of different use cases, regularly meeting with departments, talking to them about what use cases could be, how they can use it. What do they do in their day-to-day jobs? Well, here's how AI can plug into that. Let's try this. And doing a lot of trial and error, just seeing where we can gain some efficiencies. But trying to get out just from, hey, write me an email. Hey, give me meeting summary notes. There's so much more we can do with it. So we're exploring that. On a personal note, I mean, I'm using AI all over the place. I think about the homestead, and I actually have a tiller, and it wouldn't start the other day. I'd probably been in storage for a year. And I couldn't get it to work. So I went to ChatGPT on my phone, threw on video mode. I'm talking to it. I'm like, hey, this is what it's doing. This is what it sounds like. And I have a little British lady who talks to me. And she's like, oh, man, this sounds like a carburetor. And so I take it. And I was like, well, how do I fix it? And she walked me through taking this carburetor off the tiller. And then she was like, you're going to need a thin piece of wire. And you need to put it through that hole on the top. And she's like, walking. And I do it all. She's like, all right, put it back together. And I put it back together. On the first pull, it starts. And I was like, that's amazing. That's
amazing.
That's like a $300 service bill I now don't have to pay because you walked me through that. I do image generation with my girls, and I read them stories. So I'll have it create me like a grim fairy tale with my girls in it. And then I'll be like, well, I need some images to go with this. And it'll populate images of like them going through the woods, fighting a wolf or whatever it might be, because they just think that's hilarious. And we do storytelling. My wife is a homeschooler, so she homeschools the girls, and she's, given the curriculum to ChatGPT that she's following, what the girls' interests are, what we have at our house at the homestead, and then building curriculum around it. Like, hey, we have this outside, we have this treehouse, we have these woods. Like, do a history lesson about this. Oh, the girls love Paw Patrol. Put that into the math questions and. Different stuff to get them sort of engaged. So
yes,
a lot there.
It's incredible, isn't it? Zach, I don't know if I ever told you this, but Greg, co-founder of Technology Partners, my husband, has a degree in AI from WashU. Oh. From 40 years ago. We started our careers at McDonnell Douglas, and Mac was using AI. And so it's funny because he's so excited, that the AI winter is over. And I mean, he is like building all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's crazy. But now, this is so funny. We're probably going to do a case study on this. He has my 85-year-old mother-in-law using Perplexity and Gemini. And, we were saying last night, he goes, how many people can say that they can give their 85-year-old mom some tasks to do and she will do it, using Perplexity? Yeah. It's so funny. We're probably going to do a little case study on that because truly, and here's what we've seen with her, because something came up yesterday and she was like dizzy and she had asked Perplexity, hey, I've had a lot of caffeine today. Could that have something to do with it? It's almost like giving someone their own personal assistant.
Yeah.
She lives by herself. And so, it's really remarkable. Now, the one thing that we have talked about, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this. I do think that, there has been articles out there and things out there that say that like our kids, if they're using AI, we're going to be producing a dumber generation. But, what we have said is no, instructors and teachers are just going to need to learn how to have them solve bigger problems.
Yeah.
Using it,
I would love to talk about child rearing with technology in a much longer form podcast sometime than probably
let's
have
do
time
it.
For.
Yeah. Let's
do it. Yeah, but I'm a little so with my kids and it's hard to think about. And I was talking to somebody about this recently. It's like when they enter the job market, they're very little, so 6, 4, and 1. By the time they enter the job market, we're like 2, maybe even 3 deviations out of like jobs that will have come and gone. So it's like what do you prepare them for? Like, what is still going to be useful then? Because AI, if you look at from 2022 to now, leaps and bounds in what it's doing, it's probably going to continue on the current trend. And if it does, I mean, the job market changes wild. The needs change wild. How we get information, how we learn things, how we teach, everything just continues to just jump exponentially. And it's like, all right, what is going to be the best thing for them to have? The best training, what can I give them in an upbringing? So, and I'm very, I probably won't let them have any social media until they're like past 16. So, or they're pretty low tech right now around the house.
Right.
No tablets, no phones for them or anything right now. But,
it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a conversation that, you know, we do need to start really talking about, because you're right. I mean, there are going to be some jobs that, unfortunately, like entry level type jobs, we talk about that too, right? And with Copilot and AI being able to write code, I mean, what does that mean for entry level people? You know, so lots more to talk about.
Yeah, there's a sophomore here who's trying to do software development. I'm like, what do you think about AI for that? He's like, man, I haven't dug that deep into it. And I was like, you probably should, because you still have two more years till you're on the job market. And they're already laying off entry-level people. Like, you really need to think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to do another podcast, Zach, and dig into that more. One more question for you. You know, how do you personally – there's so many – you just said it. It's moving so rapidly. How do you personally stay on top of emerging trends? And then sometimes, you know, how do you know – how do you know like what to lean into, and how do you know what is just hype?
Mm. Yeah, that second one is tough. What do I do? I read a lot. I hardly watch any, you know, TV shows. I guess I watch a lot of YouTube, but a lot of videos. I watch a lot of podcasts. I read a lot. I get two or three emails a day that have a bunch of like trending news articles that are in fields that I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. So I'll skim those. That's my big ones, probably day to day. A lot of conversations just with people and what they're going on. I think networking is really big. So people in the St. Louis area, but also trying to extend out to all the way to each coast and talk to people there, just what they got going on, whether it's a monthly conversation or every couple months, just catching up with what's new. As for figuring out what's hype and what's not, oh man, that's hard. I think, you know, you hear a lot of buzzwords in our industry of things that come and go, and a lot of that stuff's just cyclical, just rebranded. I think with AI, I mean, I was dubious when I first started hearing about ChatGPT, and I was like, oh, it's just like every another branded word. But, you know, you start seeing the momentum it has, and then if you actually start touching it and playing with it, you're like, man, this is
powerful.
And I don't know, there's a gut instinct there too, a little bit. And maybe that's from experience or reading stuff, and there's things getting connected that you don't fully realize, but you start to kind of get a feeling and you're like, there's something here. This isn't just hype. Like, I can do some pretty cool stuff with this. So trust your gut.
Right. I remember having a guy on the podcast. It was probably 2 years ago now. And he had said something at the time. He said, you know, Einstein's IQ was about 145, something like that, 145, 150. You know, AI's is 1,000.
Right.
So it's like, how can you compete with that? But again, like at Technology Partners, we're like, no, you're the boss of AI. You know, the AI is assisting you and augmenting what you're able to do, right? So it's just getting who's going to be the best at learning how to leverage it, right? I think that's the key. Well, Zach, this is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs? And then if you have a something extra, if you know what is that something extra? And I could surmise a few things, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. What has helped you be successful? You know, you're something extra, but what do you believe the something extra is that every leader needs?
I think I mentioned it a little bit earlier, and I'll reiterate, but I think the something extra every leader needs is, it goes back to trusting your people. You know, you hired them, to do specific jobs. You hired them for a reason. They probably were like the best in the pool, or maybe they really spoke out to you, but Now, they've been doing this. They probably have experience. They have education around it. They have some training around it. There's some reason that you believe they could do the job. Let them go do it. Don't stand over their shoulder. If they need help, you know, be there for them, for them to come to you. But trust what we're telling you. Work together. And if you do that, you're probably going to succeed together. Sometimes decisions are wrong and things don't work out, and that's okay. But if you can, like, show what you did and the thought based off of it with the best information that you had, it didn't turn out okay. Well, let's course correct now. And we're all people. We're fallible, but we can make it work. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's good. What do you believe your something extra is? I think, you know, I could say a few things. I think you're adaptable for one thing.
Adaptable. I really like to accomplish things. So I'm big at, like, doing and getting things done. And I get great joy and really just taking things to the next level and getting it done. So my something extra is, you know, I look at processes, I see how they work, and then I try to optimize them. That's what I do.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Well, Zach, thanks so much. I appreciate you being on the show. And I will see you next week at the Akron GCIO Summit.
Great. I'll see you then, Lisa. Thank you for the opportunity to be on the show.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.